They say to fully enjoy life, you should collect experiences, not things. Physical things you buy become outdated. They lose their appeal. But an experience lasts forever and grows over the years. That's why I want you to know about the Mervis Diamonds South Africa Safari coming this March 2025. Enjoy a five-star luxury adventure with native South African and longtime fixture on the DC diamond scene, Ronnie Mervis himself, leading the group. I've been on the trip twice, and it is spectacular. You'll fly to Cape Town, see the legendary Table Mountain, visit wine country and the spectacular coast. Then it's off to the Kapama Game Reserve to see the Big Five in their natural habitat: lion, elephant, Cape buffalo, leopard, and rhino. Finally, a tour of the Cullinan Diamond Mine in Johannesburg to see where the sparkly magic comes from. All told, 11 luxury days on the ground, all-inclusive, for just $6,300 a person. This is it, people. The banger safari trip of a lifetime. I've been twice with Ronnie. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee it. Book now. Space is limited, and it's filling up quick. For more information, go to MervisDiamond.com/safari or call travel consultant John Almeida at 888-722-4872 and tell him I sent you. Remember, life is short. Collect memories, not things. As the leaves turn and the air gets crisp, it is time for some serious action. Bet on Lord Football, from heart-pounding college rivalries to the bone-crushing NFL matchups. But that's not all. The ice is getting cold and the courts are heating up. Get in on the NHL face-off and NBA tip-offs as both leagues kick off their seasons. And if you want to get really nuts, bet on the election. Won't that be fun? If you've been waiting for the right time to get in, the time is now. Make your winning move today. Sign up at mybookie.ag. Use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to be eligible for all promotions. Once again, promo code ZABE to get in on the sweet action. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. It is not every day you see a brand that represents the pride and attitude of the blue-collar community. You may know them for their tagline: dirty hands, clean money. Troll Company is for those who keep the gears turning with sweat, grit, and a whole lot of hustle. They celebrate hard-working trades with their high-quality, badass t-shirts, hoodies, and more. These guys are not just slapping logos on tees and calling it a day. These guys are the real deal. Built by blue collar for blue collar. So if you're looking for a brand that reps your grind, check out TrollCoClothing.com. That's TrollCoClothing.com. Head to TrollCoClothing.com and use promo code ZABECAST20 for 20% off your first order. Support blue collar work. Dirty hands, clean money.
Are there any places that the vice president is overperforming Joe Biden in 2020? So we can show you that as well. We just bring that out here. Harris overperforming 2020.
Holy smokes.
There you go. So let this go away and see if there's anything on the east side there.
Literally nothing?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
By 3% or more.
That is a brutal soundbite to encapsulate the red wave that crushed Kamala Harris on election night. And not to dwell on the election, because I have steered clear of politics. Many of you say good. Many others of you have said, boo, I want to hear more of that. And I say, why? You know where I stand. And there are other full-time politics and pop culture and civics type, you know, current events podcasts out there. You don't need me doing it. But I do have some thoughts about the election. Holy shit. Wow. I mean, not just a electoral college wipeout, but winning the popular vote for the first time in seemingly forever, flipping certain counties literally on their roof like a NASCAR race and a big wreck in turn four. Some incredible stuff happened. And now all three branches. Welcome aboard. Life goes on. I don't know if you had a decent Wednesday or not. If you didn't know what the outcome of the election was, or there was one going on, I bet you wouldn't even notice. Because life does go on, win or lose, after big elections. I'm old enough to have remembered the outcome of several big, exciting, and also crushing presidential elections when you allow yourself to care a bit too much. The better way to go is to care less. But I think there was a lot more riding on this one than in pretty much all the previous elections so far. And I think both sides feel that. And so now the left is girding for Hitler. But they're not leaving. They say they're leaving the country, but they're really not going to leave the country. And nobody is floating away on a makeshift raft with their family because they really fear that Hitler is going to put them in concentration camps. It's a nice rhetorical sort of a threat, but you know they're not following through with it. I've heard of Hollywood celebs saying, if this Republican wins, I'm leaving. Narrator, but in the end, they never leave. And Kamala Harris just delivered her concession speech, albeit a bit late for some people's liking, and promised a peaceful transition of power, which, look, when you get beat that bad, it's a lot easier. Had it been close and we were battling this out with recounts and lawsuits, could have been a whole different story. Thank God for that. Either way, the country probably could not have sustained a close to imagine a 269-269 tie that gets broken by the Speaker of the House of Representatives of the newly minted House. Oh my God, what a mess that would have been. At least this was clean. And if I can quote from the great Wall Street Journal annual editorials that they publish every Thanksgiving, it's a two-parter. The first part is, I forget the titles. One is The Fair Land. The first part, I forget the other part of it, but it's about, you know, America and elections and governance and the bounty that is America. One of the great lines in these editorials that have been running since like 1961 goes as follows. But we can remind ourselves that for all of our social discord, we yet remain the longest enduring society of free men governing themselves without benefit of kings or dictators. Being so, we are the marvel and the mystery of the world, for that enduring liberty is no less a blessing than the abundance of the earth. Well said. Yay, democracy. Some lessons that should be learned from this election include, one, Hispanics are not a simple demographic to predict. And they sure as heck are not in the back pocket of the Democrat Party that can just be counted on by going, okay, here's our guy, line up and vote for him. I'd say the same thing for the Jewish vote. You can't just write in, well, we had you down for X percent last time. We're going to put you down for the same this time. Wait, what? Because the Jewish vote broke more heavily Republican than in something like 40 years. The black vote, especially black men, voted at a rate for Trump and the Republicans that was far higher than anything in probably my lifetime. So there needs to be a real, if you're the Democrats and you are like a football team, you need to do some real self-scouting here. And it doesn't look like they're ready to do that yet. They might, but for now, they're going through it right now. The shocking thing was that in some of the most Hispanic districts and counties, the Trump flip from Biden 4 years ago is not to be believed. Like from a Biden plus six county to Trump plus 14 or something absurd like that. And Eagle Pass, which is pretty much the epicenter of the illegal immigration crisis, that county went for like 93% Trump. And it's hugely Hispanic. It's something like 90% Hispanic. It's crazy. And it makes sense as to why. Because you think about it. You are the simple thought is, well, Trump wants to deport illegals. I'm sure he's not going to get any Hispanic voters to go for that. You sure? Because if you're a third-generation Mexican-born U.S. citizen because your mom or dad came here 40 years ago and you've since assimilated into you know, the United States and you become a naturalized citizen, you have followed the law, you've built a business, you've raised a family. What hurts you the most? Illegal immigrants coming in that are going to put a direct economic pressure on probably the things that you have worked hard to build legally. Your landscaping business, an auto parts store, a dry cleaner, whatever it is. There's going to be pressure on you now because now you're competing with this new influx of illegal immigrants, and many of which are violent criminals. Not all, but some, and more than some. Also, they're coming from deeper parts of Central America. So they're not even what you would consider your kith and kin from across the border in Mexico. They're from Venezuela and Honduras and a bunch of other places. And while some would like to, you know, think you believe, some would like you to believe that everyone who is brown skinned is kumbaya and we're all the same and we're one big family. Oh no. I learned that when I went to the Dominican for our annual Sunburn Bowl trip and talking to the wonderful Dominican hotel staff about Haiti, with whom they share an island just with a big line drawn down the middle, and what they think of Haitians in the DR. Oh boy, boy, did I get an education. Spoiler, they don't think highly of Haitians. But I digress. So those were some of the surprises that completely threw off the pollsters that said it was a very tight race. So that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is don't ever bet against Elon Musk. You're going to lose. When does this guy ever lose? This guy is incredible in so many regards. And yet he was once upon a time the darling of the left because of his electric cars before he started to further leverage himself into politics. But he had to as a matter of survival. He voted for Obama twice, by the way. And nobody on the left thought twice about it. But now that he bought Twitter and he's actively campaigning for a Republican, he's the devil. And believe me, if they had won, oh, the march to dismantle his companies, and if they can, put him in jail, would have begun, or deport him, would have begun. Musk realized this, and he knew that it was an all-in situation, so he had to be. So he went all in. He didn't just say to Trump, here, how much money do you need? All right, I'm going to write you a check for whatever, $50 million, have fun. No, Musk went to Pennsylvania, which he knew was the key battleground state, and he camped out there for pretty much the last month of the campaign. And he got fully involved in all of Trump's political campaigning when he admits, I'm not into politics. I'm a science guy. I'm an engineer. I build companies. I invent incredible things that nobody thinks are possible. I'm not into getting votes, but he realized he had to be all in. And so that's what he did. He put himself all in. Also, his acquisition of Twitter itself was so crucial. And someone joked on Twitter saying, yeah, what an idiot. He paid $40 billion for this app and all he got was the presidency and both houses of Congress and a t-shirt, size small. Polling is a complete joke, including that Ann Seltzer woman who said, you know what? My poll says Harris in Iowa by 3 points. The equivalent of Professor Frink and the Gambletron 3000.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the Gambletron 2000 says the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
Yes, that would apply to most of the pollsters and most of their precious models. Nate Silver, who has become a darling with certain media members about, oh, he's so good, so analytic, he's got these great models. Well, he took his model down on election night and put a note up saying, you know what, I can't capture what's going on right now in this election. The model I have is not fit for this. And then he kind of said, you know, we're just two people, me and this other guy that do this, and it's too much, so take it down. I would like to say that Nate Silver's career is over as a political prognosticator, but they're still going to have him around. Because a lot of times polls are just to put out something that looks good to encourage donors to keep spending money, to keep putting good money after bad on a candidate who is doomed to lose. I think that's what Seltzer's poll was in Iowa. So the polling was terrible. There was a couple of exceptions. One was the Atlas Group and Rasmussen, who pretty much nailed it. Polymarket did a pretty good job as well. That's not a polling outfit. It's a global fluid betting marketplace that showed Trump as a pretty decent favorite through most of the last month and a half of the campaign. Now, there was wobbles along the way, and it's still just people betting. And when one French guy who's like a securities trader put a $20 million bet down on Trump, that skewed things greatly. So it's not perfect, but it's probably better than polling because people are putting their money on the line for the outcome of something that is notoriously unpredictable. And then there was this guy, another pollster, who got his lunch handed to him. This is pollster Alan Lichtman, a 77-year-old professor at American University who, along with his son, Sam, shared their stunned reactions in real time as the results rolled in. Lichtman had correctly predicted the outcome of 9 of the 10 elections since 1984. That sounds impressive, although if you don't count last night in the 9 of 10, then I'm guessing he would have missed the Trump upset, the sort of the miracle Halley's Comet slender win in 2016, and then it's not that impressive. I mean, yes, there have been some close-ish ones. Obviously, 2000 is one of them with Bush v. Gore. But Obama ran. Obama won pretty comfortably by midnight each time. So anyway, he was stunned. And here's the thing about some of these pollsters is they're so blind to their own hopeless biases. And while Lichtman is undoubtedly smart in a book sense, he is also a terminal midwit when it comes to understanding what he's actually saying. Here's what Lichtman says as he saw his candidate he predicted, Kamala Harris, go down in flames. "Oh, the democracy's gone," a defeated sounding Lichtman said on their live stream. I don't think you know what that word really means. Once a democracy is gone, it's almost impossible to recover. The way to recover is by the dictators losing wars. His son was less apocalyptic, saying he hopes Trump serves his term and we never have to deal with him again. Well, that's, I think, a pretty likely outcome. He can only serve these 4 years and he'll be 82. But is Sam Lichtman's, his son, going to be happy with a J.D. Vance presidency? Or, God forbid, back-to-back ones? I doubt it. So maybe not just be about Trump. It just could be Democrats. I don't want a Republican in there. His dad, though, doubled down saying, I've said it 100 times. Democracy is precious. But like all precious things, it can be destroyed. And typically destroyed from within. And throughout the 21st century, democracy has been in decline everywhere around the world, and America has now fallen in step. But never give up hope. Well, wait, it sounded depressing, and now you're like, but never give up hope. He simply said, it's unfathomable, as he concluded their live stream. So in other words, Trump, a guy who had everything thrown at him, was nearly assassinated twice, as well as being outspent 3-1 and absolutely hammered by the mainstream media day in, day out, 95% negative coverage, him getting the free will votes of more of 51% of the populace that voted. That's democracy dying. So in other words, just losing an election to this guy is, quote, democracy dying. And it's fragile. And once it's gone, it never comes back. But don't give up hope. What an idiot. If you're a football team and you lose like this, you got to be brutal and you got to self-scout. That's what football teams do. And you got to start with, okay, our quarterback, the candidate? Can our quarterback play? Shockingly, there's some on the Democrat side that think their quarterback was good. It's fine. She was great. Some commentators said that Kamala Harris ran a, quote, perfect campaign. Okay. You keep believing that. She was inauthentic, scared out of her wits to speak for more than 5 minutes off prompter, and really could never sell herself, never was able to present herself as a candidate in a natural way that says, look, here's who I am. Hey, here's what I want to do. And you know what? This is my philosophy on how we're going to be able to do it. The basics. They had a terrible quarterback. Also, you got to ask the hard questions about where did we go wrong? What can we do better? And right now, they're not asking any of those questions. They're doubling down, tripling down on things such as, oh, you know, it's the racism, it's the white women, it's the black men, it's misogyny, it's Joe Biden, it's Elon Musk's fault. Or if all else fails, they'll just say it was the Russians. Russians, Russians, Russians. If you're a Democrat voter and you want your team to get better, they better get through this little tantrum phase and do some self-scouting. Get a better candidate and fix the shit that's not working. And maybe re-identify with your core constituency, because Trump, no matter what you think of him personally, is he is an outsider. He's a non-politician. And for my entire lifetime, save for perhaps Ronald Reagan, who was originally an actor, then became president of the Screen Actors Guild, and then ran for governor of California, won that, then won the presidency. Most politicians, they're in politics at a very early get-go because they can't do anything else, or they don't like doing anything else. And as someone once said, politics is Hollywood for the ugly. You can make a lot of money if you get into a right situation, get your ass kissed all the time, you get a certain level of fame. It's a good deal for the talentless who have not done anything else in life. It's not what our founding fathers would have envisioned when they said, let's have citizens, regular citizens, serve the country, a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Okay. Now we're getting these politicians who can't do anything else, but they know how to get elected. They know how to raise money, and that's what they do. And I mean, I guess can't blame them, but I love the fact that now we're getting some non-politicians in the mix. Obama was the first cool president in pop culture terms, but he was still a politician. Trump is the first truly non-politician to become president, not once, but now twice. And those that he has brought in, including Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and RFK, who is pretty much a politician, Tulsi Gabbard, Dana White from the UFC, these are not your typical swamp creatures that Trump had the first time around. The dummies like Mike Pompeo and Anthony Scaramucci. Remember that complete ass clown? So he's got a much better coaching staff. As the owner of this football team that got beat last time, they've made corrections. They said, okay, let's be honest. What could we do better? What did we do wrong in 2020? They got a much better coaching staff around Trump now, and their candidate, did I call Trump the owner? He's the quarterback. Trump is amazing as a guy that runs for office. I think he ran 79 days in a row, I think I saw, that he was out on the campaign trail without a break at 78 years old. It's incredible. Incredible stamina to be doing that all day, every day, all the time, seemingly forever. But the Republicans did a couple things that shocked me as a guy who has to vote for them as a party, and that they learned some important lessons from 2020. One, vote early. Vote early and get those low propensity voters to vote early and to use as much mail-in balloting as you can. Very smart. Also, get an army of lawyers and poll watchers. I mean, an army. Laura Trump was in charge of that, and they had like 230,000 lawyers and poll watchers and everything else to make sure that none of this tomfuckery was going to go on election night. And then you open it up to a big tent, go for a demographic that was feeling shit upon at the moment in the electorate, and ride with it. And it was a wipeout in political terms, but it was still too close for a lot of us. And there was a lot of people that were ready to be done with this. So that's my big takeaway from the election. And we'll see if the Democrats figure out, you know, hey, you're supposed to be the party for the working middle class. The working class, white electorate, and now Latino and black, they're turning on you because you're offering them nothing. That's a massive coalition of votes in there that you really need to try to scramble and win them back, because that's what your party's identity was built on. As for the next 4 years or 2 years or 2 months, I don't know. Maybe some good can come. I hope that there's some good things done that I say, good, that's what I want to see this country do. A, B, C, D. I'm not going to get into the weeds on that. And we'll see what happens. Trump can only serve one term. He's 78. You'd think he'd be willing to go YOLO on this and not be so cautious, because when you have this kind of a mandate, you better fucking spend it because it'll be gone soon enough. But you know what? You can't predict this stuff, and I'm keeping low expectations for any positive sort of outcomes, just because it's not that I don't think they're going to try or that he's got smart people around him this time. Just always keep your expectations low on politics and politicians and your party, be it Republican or Democrat, doing anything that matters in your life in a positive way. And if you keep those super low, like I don't expect anything, then if they do something, you'll be like, son of a gun, they actually did something to help my life be better. Quick break. When we come back, let's talk some football. Our man, Mr. X, is back in the saddle this week, and we'll get his thoughts on week number 10 and the Thursday night opener. It's a good one. Bengals and Ravens to start the National Football League cycle for another weekend. You are listening to the Zabecast. They say to fully enjoy life, you should collect experiences, not things. Physical things you buy become outdated. They lose their appeal. But an experience lasts forever and grows over the years. That's why I want you to know about the Mervis Diamonds South Africa Safari coming this March 2025. Enjoy a five-star luxury adventure with native South African and longtime fixture on the DC diamond scene, Ronnie Mervis himself, leading the group. I've been on the trip twice, and it is spectacular. You'll fly to Cape Town, see the legendary Table Mountain, visit wine country and the spectacular coast. Then it's off to the Kapama Game Reserve to see the Big Five in their natural habitat: lion, elephant, Cape buffalo, leopard, and rhino. Finally, a tour of the Cullinan Diamond Mine in Johannesburg to see where the sparkly magic comes from. All told, 11 luxury days on the ground, all-inclusive, for just $6,300 a person. This is it, people. The banger safari trip of a lifetime. I've been twice with Ronnie. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee it. Book now. Space is limited, and it's filling up quick. For more information, go to MervisDiamond.com/safari or call travel consultant John Almeida at 888-722-4872 and tell him I sent you. Remember, life is short. Collect memories, not things. As the leaves turn and the air gets crisp, it is time for some serious action. Bet on Lord Football, from heart-pounding college rivalries to the bone-crushing NFL matchups. But that's not all. The ice is getting cold and the courts are heating up. Get in on the NHL face-off and NBA tip-offs as both leagues kick off their seasons. And if you want to get really nuts, bet on the election. Won't that be fun? If you've been waiting for the right time to get in, the time is now. Make your winning move today. Sign up at mybookie.ag. Use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to be eligible for all promotions. Once again, promo code ZABE to get in on the sweet action. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Hiring? With Indeed, your search is over. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Indeed's matching engine leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, constantly learning from your preferences. The more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support our show, saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We'd like to award this year's Pulitzer Prize to Mr. X. Unfortunately, we don't know who he is, so his cash award will be used to feed starving children.
No! I'm Mr. X. Gimme.
We'll need some proof.
Ta-da!
He is Mr. X. Ha!
Thank you, folks.
I'll just call myself Mr. X. Yep, you can't go wrong with Mr. X.
And he is back after a week off, a bye week of sorts. And we could use him right now for this Thursday night tilt. It's a good one, Mr. X. Bengals and Ravens. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, thanks. Yes, we finally got a really good one. Haven't had one since probably the opener.
Yeah. Now, you sent me your picks after I'd put the pod to bed, but I got them in my email. I will know if you're lying if you try to do that right now. Can you remind me who you picked last week? And it is documented in my email, and I'm sure your subscribers got it.
Well, I actually put it on since I had the first bye week in whatever, 7 years.
It's been a while.
I did tweet them out.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Wednesday. Yeah.
Times?
I don't usually, but I did last week.
Yes. Okay. And who'd you have?
Who was last week? Had the winner. Was it Jets, right? The Jets last week? Yeah, Jets. We both had the right side.
God damn it. I should know this. I should assume that you're not going to know this.
No,
and I need to do better research.
I got it right here, right here. I know that I've got it. I know we both hit the Jets because it was the trappiest line ever.
It was trappy as hell. But they looked terrible in the first half.
Yep. You took the over. I took the under. It hit under. But I did miss the prop. But I hit both the game and the under.
Remind me who the Jets played, since I'm now of that age where I can't fucking remember who they played. You don't know either, do you? Jesus Christ, are we fucking terrible? Oh my God, we suck.
It was the Texans.
We got to tighten up here. Well, you and me, we got to tighten the fuck up.
I got to look ahead. I'm not good at looking back.
Well, we do recount our picks from last week. So that probably is a little nugget I should jot down on a piece of paper. I take full responsibility for that. My apologies. Okay. So
I'm on it from now on.
I was with you on the Jets, but I had the wrong side of the total. So that now brings my season record, according to you, at 4-5. You are now 7-2, documented with a Wednesday afternoon evening pick for the Thursday open the week game on Amazon Prime. My totals are 3-5-1. Your totals are 6-2-1. So you are a stellar, documented 13-4-1 on Thursday nights with me here on the pod. Pretty nice.
Correct.
Pretty nice.
But I think I'm probably like 4-7 remembering the next week who it was.
Probably. You're on a prop losing streak. You're now 4-5 if you want to play the prop bet. We're a combined 7-10-1 for me. I'm combined 7-10-1 on both of my bets.
Right.
Totals and sides, and then you are 13-4-1. So that's a very good record. Let's keep it up this week. We'll get to the Thursday game in just a second. But first, you want to weigh in, because you didn't get to last week, on the Anthony Richardson tap out.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that one's probably been beat up a lot now. But
well, I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, is there, forget the whole, hey, he hasn't played much, he doesn't know that you're not supposed to do that. I ask a simple question. If you just ran a marathon and there's, and you need some rest, I think handing off to the running back takes less effort than running to the sideline and back.
It does.
What's so hard about calling a run play? You know, maybe you audible out of what the coach sent in and you hand the ball off. You got yourself 45 seconds of rest. What's that hard about it?
Well, his big dumb mouth arguably cost him his starting job, because I'm convinced, Mr. X, that he not, that had he not said, if he had said, I came out because I was injured, that's different than saying I was just winded. He said, I was pretty tired, man. That was a lot of running around. I'm not going to lie. And he said it in a way that was like, look at me. I'm doing the responsible thing.
Yeah.
And everyone in the football community was aghast, saying, you cannot do that. That is never done. Your teammates, your linemen, they don't get to go, I'm tired. I need to go get a juice box.
Yeah. No, it's, I just, like I said, at the end of the day, running the sideline back takes more wind out of you than the ball off. That used to be a formula for gassers after practice the next day, so I'm tired the next week, right?
Yeah. Well, it's the NFL, though. You'll see things on a week-to-week basis. You say to yourself, I've never seen or heard of that before in my life. Just like DJ Moore. Did you see DJ Moore walk off the field for the Bears in the game against the Cardinals?
Well, Bears have a habit of that, right? At least he wasn't hooting to the crowd during the last play of the game.
Right. I mean, Dwayne Haskins, may he rest in peace, had to be pulled away from the fans, taking selfies and high-fiving fans when he had to go back out for kneel downs at the end of a rare win in the rookie season of one Dwayne Haskins.
Zabe, all these things, okay, grumpy man about to shake fist at Sky, but all these things come from coaching, from the youngest age on up. If players aren't held accountable and taught how to behave, they don't know it on their own. You know, if you are allowed to cut up, you don't just one day suddenly know how to behave. I think. Yeah.
Well, and then you had, and you texted me. Somehow we talked about the dropping the ball in the end zone thing right before it happened. But you texted me about the whole, oh my God, look what just happened. Dropping the ball on an easy touchdown before you go into the end zone.
I just have no idea how that happens. I have no idea.
Malachi Corley is the guy's name. Yeah. And look, if it was my team, I'd cut a guy like that just to send a message. Just like I would have cut Tyrique Stevenson. The Bears tried to discipline Tyrique Stevenson by saying early on in the week, you're not going to start as punishment for being a jackass. And he responded by taking himself out of practice because he was pissed off. Cut the guy. Send a message.
Set the tone.
Yeah. But that's you and I being old men on chairs on the porch. And the young guys will say, well, that's not very smart because he's still a top third round talent. And you're just going to be hurting yourself in the long run. And look, it was one of these mistakes. He's going to get better at it. You can't be so hard on him. Well, then it's going to happen again, or something else dumb is going to happen again.
Nobody's going to get better if they're never accountable. I mean, my goodness, this is a guy who, I know he was a high draft pick on the Jets, but I don't think he had but like a target or two all year. They give him a little end around first play touchdown. Oh yeah, I forgot to bring the ball with me. How can you not be excited for your first score? You can't make that up.
Well, the reason guys do it is to look cool. It's to
see how it's cool to be an idiot. But okay.
You ever seen guys driving motorcycles at 80 miles an hour down the highway, popping wheelies on one wheel, doing 80, literally? Have you ever seen those videos?
Okay.
Have you?
No, but I can picture it.
Okay. It's insane.
Yeah.
But if you're really good at riding a motorcycle, you can do it, but you're putting yourself right there on the knife's edge of killing yourself. It's risky behavior, but what does it look like? It looks cool. So dropping the ball, the instant you'd cross the goal line in a casual way, like, that ain't nothing. Of course I score touchdowns. I'm Malachi Corley. Look at me. That's why it keeps happening. It's a dangerous, stupid thing that looks cool if you pull it off. If you don't, it's a disastrous football play that could lose your whole team the game. Could get your coach fired. Of course, they've already fired their coach, so didn't matter.
Well, what does – okay, you've got the ins. What does – what happens in the players' meetings the next week? Are they all like, okay, man, just don't do it again? Or are they mad? I mean, they got to be mad.
I would hope they would get to load up some pillowcases with bars of soap and beat the shit out of them.
Code red.
Code red the guy. Code red. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make it frontier justice amongst the tribe and tell them, you're going to pay for this, motherfucker, you dipshit.
Yeah. Code red's the only way to make sure it don't happen again.
Yeah, he said, here's what he said. My emotions were still extremely elevated just from the fact that for me, I just scored my first NFL touchdown. Okay, don't care. This is basic shit. You know, that moment got pulled back from me, but obviously, you know, my teammates rallied around me, told me that they'd get the ball back for us. I felt really good after that. No! Get the ball back! You forfeited 7 points. You can never get that back. Just because maybe later they get the ball back and then you score another touchdown, you're still down 7 precious points with your high-paid quarterback in Aaron Rodgers fighting to get you guys back in the playoff picture, your interim coach trying not to look like an idiot. It doesn't work that way, genius.
Yeah. Did you hear Aaron Rodgers on the Amazon post game?
No.
You know, about an hour or so. I like the Amazon broadcast, by the way.
You do. Do you watch the data cast from them?
No.
Are you aware of it?
Yeah, that's the one that has all the fantasy stuff at the same time.
No, it's a little bit different than that.
Okay.
It's the advanced stats thing. It's not fantasy. It's stuff like how fast are players moving. It's got visualizations and AI that predicts which players may or may not blitz. Has pressure alerts, defensive vulnerability, coverage ID. You've never watched that.
No, I have not.
You should
predict which players will get into the end zone and which ones will drop it short.
No.
No.
Okay. Although you could probably feed the AI algorithm with SAT scores, with their GPA in college, what school they went to, was it in the SEC or not? Right. What kind of car do they drive relative to their contract? Is it too much money?
Do they have an ugly girlfriend?
Yeah. Anyway, check it out. Right. Check it out tomorrow night because it's pretty cool. It's more data than I need. I just want to watch the game and Carissa Thompson at halftime and postgame. But, yes. So what did Rodgers say postgame?
Well, after the game he was on, and he said he's pretty good at this. He's not my favorite. But tongue-in-cheek, he said, we figure we need to score 28 to 30 points to win this game. You know, they had 21. And he goes, I'm counting this as 28.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm counting this as 28.
Yeah. Well, that was his blast at the dude for dropping the ball.
Well, he said afterward, their interim coach, Ulbricht, said, you owe us one. Again.
Yeah.
No, it's not how it works. This is not like getting a round of drinks at the bar. I'll get the next one. Yeah. These are unique, precious points that your team is fighting for week in, week out. I feel like I'm taking crazy juice here, but I'm glad you're with me on this. We're not the ones who are crazy. It's these NFL players sometimes. Okay, pressing on. Item two. Recapping last week in the NFL.
Okay.
You have the NFL so far and year to date.
Yeah, well, last week, the favorites crushed more than ever. They went 10-4-1.
Oh, my God. That's a string of 3 weeks now?
Yeah.
In a row in which the favorites, and by way of the favorites, the public, has been rolling?
Yeah, and not only that, but the favorites won outright, you know, on the money line, 13 out of 14. The only underdog to win a game was the Carolina Panthers.
I know.
Which, the worst team in,
got their coach fired.
Yeah. So now the on the season, the favorites are at 55%. That's really high.
Straight up?
No, against the spread. Against the spread.
Favorites are 55% ATS.
Yeah, that's wild.
What are they SU? Do you have that number?
Around 68, 69, I think.
Okay.
And the overs, even though they went 7-8 last week, they're still up on the year at 53%. After a horrible first 2 or 3 weeks, they have been hitting as well. So the favorites and overs means public is happy. And the biggest oddity of all last week was the public doing well and me doing well for once, because usually I'm the opposite.
Well, maybe you got on the public train.
Yeah, sometimes. Every now and then. Although I missed the big one of the week, as you know.
Your three-star, which was the Browns. I want to talk about that. So I'm reading your wonderfully detailed write-up of your four picks, which your subscribers get. You're kind enough to slide it to me at no charge to the league. And I'm reading your write-up of the Browns, and it goes something like this, and I'm paraphrasing. Okay. The Browns suck. I knew they'd suck. I bet them to suck, and they've looked sucky this year. But last week, they looked pretty good with Jameis Winston, so what the hell? I think I'm going to bet them as my three-star this week. I'll hang up and listen off the air. Can you explain what made you suddenly feel like you were on the Browns?
Well, clearly I was dead wrong.
No, but I mean, it was such a persuasive write-up of how and why they suck.
Yeah.
And then you swerved us at the end. Like, that said, I'm on them, baby. I'm on them.
Well, I think the main point was, I think every now and then you feel like there's a team you're really on. I bet the Browns under for the year. Felt dead on. I bet them a lot early. Dead on. I bet them to win the week before when Jameis was debuting. I just felt like their defense is still very good. They just were a team that was in dysfunction with Watson. And I thought simply Winston would be enough to turn it around. I also thought the Chargers were the most overrated in the league. So it seemed like a great matchup of a 2-and-whatever team versus an overrated team. And the Browns were, you know, it was an even game. And I was like, the Chargers are not good enough to be favored on the road. But clearly the Browns are the Browns. And Jameis only throws picks in triple, you know, three at a time.
Yeah.
He either throws zero or three.
Zero or a million picks. Right. It was a three bagger right there. Your two star is the Falcons minus three. That was an easy winner against the Cowboys. Dak Prescott, by the way, getting news on this Wednesday that his torn calf muscle is torn partially off the bone, and that this is usually a longer than 4 week injury. So he's already going to be out for 4 weeks because they put him on IR. And with the Cowboys currently sitting at 3-5, they're cooked, right? Yeah, Cooper Rush can't do much better than 2-2. They're 3-5, the Cowboys, hosting the Eagles on Sunday. And they are 7-point home dogs at Jerry World. They go out and get a receiver from the Panthers who is having trouble getting on the field right now in this guy Mingo. And they paid way too much for him, and they shouldn't even be buying at this point. They ought to be selling. But Jerry can't stand for that. So,
yeah, and what is with – I mean, are we ever going to see Trey Lance? Is he that bad that he can't beat out Cooper Rush?
Great question. And I think the answer is he must be.
Must be.
Because you're right, there's no reason not to. Dolphins plus 7 was your one star, and that hit. The Dolphins damn near pulled off the clean upset altogether, but at least they covered comfortably. And then you had the Colts plus 5 at the Vikings, and that looked like a skinny little backdoor winner until the Vikings scored a late touchdown. Then the Colts teased you down 11, kicking a field goal to make it 8. And they never were able to get the ball back into the end zone. Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
That was a bad game, by the way. Sunday night's game was a bad game.
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. It looked like, you know what it looked like? Every other Colts game this year. They all stink. They're all boring.
Yeah.
They just usually lose by 3 or win by 3. But, yeah.
All right. Next up, you have 7 things that bother you about the NFL. And you asked if I have any that bother me, and I felt like responding, how much time do you got?
Well, okay, these are not, I'm not going to say these are, you know, earth shattering, but man, they bother me.
Okay.
Number one, okay, the thing this year about the whole crackdown on guns, weapons, whatever, you can't point your finger at a guy, okay? Okay, fine. I don't know the right answer to that. But I know when the Patriots score, there's 6 guys firing muskets, okay?
And we talked about this back when these penalties were being doled out.
Oh, I'd missed that.
Is there a new one that has happened recently? Because they clipped the Eagles or the Falcons player in the game on the road at the Eagles. Then they won anyway. Kirk Cousins bailed him out. But he almost fucked him. And then I think it happened the following week. Forget who the receiver was. He made finger guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can, don't you point a finger gun, but we can fire muskets. I mean, I'm not sure I buy that.
Oh,
and heck, the Buccaneers fire cannons.
Mm-hmm.
I just, something about that seems a little odd.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's number 7. Number 6. Top 7 things that grind Mr. X's gears in the National Football League.
The misdirection on sides kicks. Okay. One of the boys asked me last week, because it used to be in the old days when you did onsides, you had 10 guys line up over close to the sideline.
Right.
And the kicker would put it over there and it would be just a melee. Well, for safety, they now can only have 5 on each side of the kicker.
Right.
Okay, great. We've practiced an onsides kick. We need to do the onsides kick. The defense is lined up symmetrical, offsetting them, you know, kind of man on man. And the kicker who runs towards the ball like he's going to kick it to the right and then fakes and kicks it to the left. Oh, whoa, you fooled us. Like the guys on the left are asleep because they're not paying attention. And every time they do that, he mishits the ball because he outthinks himself. Just kick the ball, right?
Yeah.
Why do you have to fake right and go left? Because it's not like the guys on the left are going, oh, I'm sorry, coach. I thought he was kicking to the other side. I wasn't trying.
I don't think that fools anybody, but
nobody.
It would not be the first time a football coach has been accused of using virtual voodoo just to try to get some sort of mystical advantage that doesn't even exist. Number 5, things that grind Mr. X's gears about the National Football League.
What is with the pylon cam? Why is there a pylon cam some games and not others?
I thought they put them in for every game.
Well, there's been so many plays where they don't have a goal line shot, and you say, where's the pylon cam? Burton, the Jet on Thursday night, when he dropped the ball, for a while I thought they were going to say there's no good angle. You can't hit. But a couple weeks ago when Kyle Pitts dropped the ball short of the goal line, they let it stand because there was no shot down the goal line.
Right.
And I'm like, where's the pylon cam? Sometimes you have it. Sometimes you don't.
I'll have to do some digging on this. When the pylon cam was first invented or first pioneered, I don't want to say invented, but someone said, hey, we could put a camera in the pylon. I remember John Mara of the Giants, dickhead that he is, say to like Peter King in Football in America, his column, well, we don't necessarily want to approve that as an official camera for reviews because we don't know if we can afford it, basically.
Oh, yeah. Said. Yeah. So we got pylon cams in half the parks, but we don't have enough money for the rest.
That's serious? What he said, something to that effect, and I lit his ass up going, are you goddamn kidding me? Like, they're not that expensive. B, look at the finances of the league. You can afford it. I was under the understanding that they're standard issue now in the NFL, and there's more than just 2 cameras in it. There's like 3 or 4 different eyes embedded. And I've even seen, Mr. X, a pylon next to the pylon cam.
Yeah.
That is even better because remember, when you're looking through the actual pylon itself, you don't really know exactly when the player may touch it or the ball may touch it or what body part is knocking the view offhand. So you kind of need a second pylon cam next to the pylon. And well, now I've said pylon so many times, it sounds weird in my head.
Well, I'd take that second one and I'd put it in the arena that doesn't have a first one.
Sure. There's also, I've seen this kind of more in college. I've seen pylon cam for the first down pylon that is not official, but it's there on the lay it on the ground orange arrow denoting a first down thing. Matt,
I get the cost of that, but I just don't understand why. Like when Kyle Pitts
doesn't cost anything.
One that he dropped
$200 GoPro. Buy them in bulk if you're the league.
You know what? Take an iPhone 16
and
paste it to the pylon.
That honestly would work just as well.
Okay.
This number, one bothers me. Number more. Four. Number four.
This one really bothers me. And you can say, this is rarely happens and it's petty. But back in the day when you had an 8-man coaching staff and you were busy, now you got whatever, 15, 18 coaches and 57 interns. Somebody has time to pay attention to this. When somebody punts the ball, let's say late at the first half, it could be game. The play that drives me craziest is fair catch on the 10, followed by kneel down, go to the half. Why? I would never allow anyone to field a punt before I kneel down.
Well,
nothing.
How much time is left in the half? I need to know that.
Well, if you're going to do one kneel down and run to the half, I don't care. Fill it in 10 seconds, 20 seconds, whatever.
So the other team only has, they either have no timeouts or one timeout left, so they can't.
Sure.
Okay.
I understand that you'd rather be on the 10 than the 2, but I see a guy field the ball, fair catch. They come out, kneel down, they go to the half. There is nothing you benefit by catching that ball. The only thing that can go wrong is you can muff it. Why you just let it drop and go to the half?
I would imagine, and I'm not defending it because you're right, it's a strategically minus play for the most part. But if they get a perfect soft bounce at the 10 and they got guys to cover it and they down it at the half yard line, now you can't kneel down. You have to run a running play to avoid a safety and things can get squirrely and sometimes they can get you. That would be the only thing I can think of.
That is accurate. And I would just compare that to the number of times where a guy
fucks up the punt.
Somebody gets blocked into him. Bad things happen. And more often than not, it's not bouncing to the six inch. It's going to there.
Number three, things that bother Mr. X about the NFL.
I call it the angry challenge. When a coach is upset on a key play and he just throws that flag because he's mad.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't matter how angry you are. You're wrong.
Yeah.
That Gary Danielson did an awesome job in a college game. He did the Michigan game, but I might be wrong. When Michigan, there was a real tough play on a catch.
Yeah.
And is it a catch? No. And immediately they look at it and Danielson goes, "Nope, that's not a catch." And the coach was angry and he throws the challenge. And when they come back from the commercial, Danielson was great. He goes, "Well, you just wasted a challenge and a key timeout because you don't know the rule."
Yeah.
And I thought that was good. He called him out on that. But you can't challenge just because you're angry.
Yeah, but they do all the time. Or they challenge because they're scared they're going to lose. Or they challenge because they think, God, I'll never be able to live with myself if this was overturnable. Or they're like, I don't want to hear it from the media because they've got a better view of this sitting in front of their TVs in the press box than I do. And they can sit there and look at it after we've moved on. And then they'll be like, "You're an idiot. Why didn't you challenge that?"
Yeah. Simple rule in life. You almost always mess up when you do something angry. But anyway, here's my last one.
Well, no, we're only on number two. That was number three on my book.
You know, I think Richardson was one of the seven. We skipped around on that.
All right. Well, Guns was seven. I forgot six. Pylon was five. Punt was four. Angry challenge is three. 2-1.
Well, Richardson should have been in there somewhere. We did him separately.
Okay.
The tap out. Okay.
Here's Do you have two left?
I have one left.
Well, then you really didn't have seven. You had five.
I did because Anthony Richardson, we didn't count.
Well, that only gets you to six.
One, two, three. You skipped the misdirection onside.
Oh, yeah, onside. Thank you. Okay. All right.
Okay,
cool.
So here's my one that I think you have to be a little older, but I call it the evolution of rules. I think you're old enough, Zabe, to remember back when the offside rule was different. It used to be the defense could jump off, and as long as they got back before the snap, it was okay.
I remember that.
And the offensive lineman had to hold their position.
Right.
It didn't matter. The guy could jump off. He's going around you on the end. You can't move. If you move, it's on you, not him. And it was kind of an awkward rule. Every third and 12, Bruce Smith would intentionally jump off sides to try to draw the flag and get back. And if the man moved, and it's kind of counterintuitive to have somebody jump right at you and stay frozen. But the kids grew up playing that way, and they got it. Then they got the bright idea of, well, we're going to call that, we'll let him get back, but if you cause the guy to move, then it's offsides. And when that rule first came, I'm watching that going, why are these guys holding their position? Every time they jump off, you should fake like it got you.
Right.
And it took about 2 or 3 years before they started doing it, you know, right. Like where you back up a step and point like, oh, he fooled me. Like, you know, it's a fake.
You don't even have to respond in real fluid time to the encroachment is what it's called.
Yes.
Encroachment.
And now the same thing is in the midst of happening, and it's taken a couple of years, and it's finally starting to happen.
I know what you're going to talk about.
The substitution rule?
All right, there's that. I was going to say two coaches now in the last 2 weeks, one in college, one of the pros, have taken a intentional 12 men on the field penalty to give the other team a first down on second and less than five. So they don't waste two more 40-second chunks of time in the final 2 minutes running a second down and third down play.
Yep. You should be able to decline that. But no, mine is the sub rule where now, again, you know, I was good at this in youth sports and seeing loopholes and helping with making rules before the other guys see the loophole. But here's
what a shock, by the way, that you were that guy when you coached your sons X2, X3, X4 on the mean streets of Arlington.
Fairfax. And by the way, you never remember X1. He's always left out.
I'm sorry. X1. X1, 2, 3, and 4.
There you go. But here's the point. Now they have the rule, which kind of makes sense, but they don't think it through. If the offense subs, the defense is allowed to sub.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The offense has to do it quickly. They've learned finally that if the offense is a little late, and I don't mean really late, just a little late, like they sub and the ref stands over the ball, you know, there's 25 on the play clock. And then it's like what the defense is finally learning to do is, oh, wait, they subbed. We want to sub. And they take the fat defensive tackle, jog as slowly as he can off the field. Or no, they'll run a defensive lineman out, jog. Oh, wait, are you in for me? Okay, jog. And then there's not enough time left, and the offense burns the timeout or gets the penalty.
So the play clock is running when the defense is making their mandatory or mandated allowable substitution?
It's not so if the offense does it.
No, I know. And let me rephrase this. I know what you're talking about. When the defense is subbing because they have the right to match the offense.
Right. Slow it down.
And they slow it down to burn a lot of clock.
Not just the clock, but if they don't get it off in time, it's a delay on the offense.
I know. That's the clock. The play clock, Mr. X.
Right.
So why wouldn't the defense then just slow walk it all the way to zero?
That's what I'm saying. They are. And the offense will see it coming and they'll burn the timeout. And as you know, making them burn the timeout is a valuable part of the game.
Okay. Well, then I'm not sure you're explaining how that works accurately, because otherwise every time an offense wanted to sub out a position group, the defense could take as long as they want and then force a delay of game.
Well, here's the point, because I've seen this happen. You're right. They're not going to let you take 38 seconds to sub. Okay. But if you instead
But if there's 20 seconds left and you take 15 to do it.
Or 20 close. Yeah, they'll let you. They're getting really good at running a guy off the sideline.
Late. It seems like there ought to be a definition of they're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, the point is, let's do it better. Let's say the offense runs their sub out there at 30 instead of 40.
Right.
Okay, 30, 29, 28. The ref runs in and hovers over the ball. And then
don't they stop the play clock at that point?
No, the play clock runs.
Okay, all right.
And so then what happens is the defensive coach is smart enough to go, Johnson, you're in. And he slow jogs it out there.
All right.
And then they look around and they slow jog it off. And now we're down at 3-2-1, and it's either a penalty or they waste their timeout. All right. It took them a long time to realize, don't be in a hurry to sub on defense. Yeah. Take as long as you can, and they'll burn their timeout.
All right. I need to look more closely at that exchange and maybe talk to one of my referee friends about the mechanic of it, because either I'm missing something or maybe you're not quite describing it right, because it seems like there'd be a way to game it so that you could cause a delay of game every time.
That's the point. The key is the offense usually does it rapidly. If they're at all late, then the defense can game it and draw the delay or draw the timeout. Okay. I saw it happen three times in college this weekend.
Oh, okay. So this was in college.
But it's the same rule. The pros are a little slow to get.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
That's my list of things that bug me.
Okay. We'll keep a fresh list as new annoyances crop up as the season goes on, which they surely will. This week in the NFL, the first annoyance of the weekend begins in Germany with maybe one of the worst games of the year, the 2-7 Giants and the 2-7 Panthers from Allianz Arena in Munich, where the Giants are 6.5-point favorites over the Panthers.
Yeah, if there's ever a don't worry about getting up early Sunday game, that's a one.
Early, it's 9:30 a.m. East Coast time. That's early for you?
That's early when I'm updating games on the website till 4 or 5 a.m. on Sunday. That's early. Yeah,
okay.
That's early.
Okay. Well, it's on at 9:30 on NFL Network, and it might be the best game of the week. Who knows? Two ugly teams bumping uglies in Germany.
And if you can't afford pylon cans, maybe just leave them both over there.
Oh, the Germans. The Germans have the best pylon cans ever. You wait till you see our pylon cam. Super 4K resolution. All right, other matchups this weekend that are juicy ones.
Yeah, I like the Pitt at Washington, of course. I mean, every time in my kids' lifetimes that Pitt has come to Washington, it's been a home game for Pitt.
Pittsburgh Steeler fans not only travel, and this is a relatively easy 5.5-hour jolt down the Pennsylvania Turnpike down into Ralston, Maryland. They not only travel, but they are like a virus that has metastasized through every state in the country. And so they come out of the woodwork, Yinzer fans, wherever the Steelers go. And I respect it. They're one of the handful of national fan bases that oozes out of the mud wherever a team goes. So I believe there's going to be a heavy Pittsburgh presence, not nearly as bad as it was one Thursday night in the Jim Zorn era, in which they had to go silent count. The Redskins at home, in part because Danny did nothing to throttle the resale of prime Redskin tickets in the lower bowl to the opposing fans. He's like, fuck it. I want all the revenue. Sell them to whoever you want. Yeah. Dipshit.
Well, the other thing on that is that, the reason, yes, they're a good fan base, but also it was real easy for them to come to Washington games when you could buy the tickets on StubHub for $1.95.
Right. This will be a tougher
now
ticket.
Now you're not getting that.
This will be a tougher ticket. I look forward to seeing just how jacked the home crowd will be for this game. It's a 1 o'clock game, though. Was not flexed out of the 1 o'clock window, which is interesting. It might have been, they might have had a hold on that where they weren't allowed to grab it from CBS. That's one of the good games. Niners-Buccaneers is pretty saucy, even though both teams are 500 or below. Niners are 4-4. Bucks are 4-5. This game's in Tampa, and San Fran is -6 as they're starting to get guys back. I believe this could be Christian McCaffrey's first game back.
Supposed to be. Question is he really good, and will they pitch count him? We'll see. That's a great matchup, but they're two very beat up teams right now, so we'll see. And Baker Mayfield, honestly, he's not going to be, but he should be in the MVP conversation for what he's doing on that team.
Really? MVP?
Well, he's led that team around. The receivers are all, he's throwing to Cade Otton.
I know he is, but I didn't think his numbers, I had not heard, by the way, him being mentioned for possible MVP, but I'll confess, Mr. X, I don't follow that shit in the regular season. Like, to me, MVP is such a boring, quote, debate, because the players who could all be named MVP, they're all great players, and they've had great seasons, and I'll just wait until the year is over. I don't need to track it like it's a fucking race. This is not the Heisman to me. Ooh, who's leading for MVP? Now, I know why ESPN likes to talk about it, because they want their listeners to bet on their gambling affiliated sites on that prop bet. So they talk about it a lot. And sure, might make a killing on that prop bet if you get lucky with a guy who's a long shot at the start of the season. But the actual debate does not tickle my brain at all.
Concur. Let me rephrase that. For a guy who kicked around on four teams in a year, he suddenly looks like a franchise quarterback who's playing very well in Tampa. Just, I can't imagine why Cleveland is not wishing he was still there.
Shut my mouth. He's at 71% completions with 23 touchdowns over 9 INTs, with a wide receiver roster that has been decimated with injuries to their two big guns, Evans and Godwin. And he's got a passer rating of 105.6.
Okay.
Well, there it is. Let it be known. Well said. The other game, I think, that is amongst the better of the games, and there's a bunch of teams that are kind of scuffling to get right on the year, I think it's the Cowboys and Eagles for this reason alone. This could be a Mike McCarthy death blow game if the Eagles humiliate them in front of Jerry in his home stadium 2 weeks before Thanksgiving.
Mike McCarthy, death blow game, 12.0.
Death blow.
How many times have we said that? But you could be right.
Lions-Texans is a good one record-wise. It's one of the few with two teams with winning records. 7-1 Lions, 6-3 Texans. Lions are 3.5-point road favorites. And this one down at NRG Stadium. Texans just have not been right this year since Nico Collins went down. They're not as explosive as they were last year, and they can't run well enough to offset it on a consistent basis. There are times in which the Bengals running back that they got, Mixon, has been good, but he's just come back after, you know, a pretty serious injury, so he's kind of getting it going. But there's a game for you right there as the Lions try to press their record to 8-1. Are they the best team in the NFL right now?
Well, you are what your record says you are, so okay. I guess so.
Do you like him better than Baltimore, who plays tomorrow night? We're going to pick that game in just a second.
Yeah, I probably lean to Baltimore being better.
Okay.
But by the way, that Detroit at Houston was my preseason Super Bowl clash, Detroit and Houston, to make it, so we'll see.
Oh, all right. And that's what you're sticking on for the bowl, huh?
Well, as they say, I'm not allowed to change it.
So, right, you got it, and you're on it.
Yep.
All right, let's get to the matchup on Thursday night. Let's talk about it. Let's go ahead and pick it. The Bengals at the Ravens in Baltimore, and the number is 5.5. Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm seeing 6 pretty much now, but it'll be 6. And you know, this is Baltimore's 6-3, but they're 6-1 after that horrible start. They are.
Whoa! Slow down.
Sorry.
The Bengals or the Ravens?
Ravens. Didn't I say Baltimore? Sorry.
You might have. I might have misheard you. I just want to be clear on this. Okay. So the Ravens are 6-3, and they started out 1-2.
0-2.
Okay, so they're 6-1 since an 0-2 stumble. They also feature the quarterback with the most touchdowns in the league passing in Lamar Jackson with 20. And Derrick Henry has 11 touchdowns rushing. That is also leading the league. Not often you get both of those on one team. They are an explosive group on offense.
Efficiency, all the efficiency ratings, they're top two or three in every category on offense. And by the way, that 6-1 roll they're on, the only loss was to Jameis Winston. Anyway.
When I say that Lamar has the most touchdowns, he's got tied for the most touchdowns passing with 20 with Joe Burrow. I think that's the number, but you fold in his rushing touchdowns and he's got the most combined.
Yes. They're also 5-3-1 against the spread. And Baltimore has gone over in 8 of their 9 games this year. Cincinnati, similar, they've gone over in 6 of 9. So this has got shootout written all over it. They played earlier in this year at Cincy, and Baltimore won 41-38. So I'm pretty sure you're going to see most of the world firing that one over. It's a great matchup, though, but at the end of the day, it's a short work. Usually a division dog is a great play. I call this the don't overthink it game. Baltimore's on a roll. It's a short work week and travel for Cincy. I'll lay the 6 with Baltimore.
Don't think, don't blink special, a shortish 5.5, even though it's a division game, and you like the Baltimore Ravens to keep it rolling. By the way, I'm such an idiot. We just mentioned Baker Mayfield has 23 touchdowns, so he's got the most passing. But again, combining Lamar's 20 passing, and let me check the rushing on him, he's got the most total touchdowns in the NFL. Yeah. All right. I am going to take the Kitty Cats against all common sense. Because to me, the Ravens are one of these teams that as soon as you think you can lock onto them and start riding them, something happens. I'm not saying they're going to lose per se, but I am now a Bengals believer that they have sorted their shit out from a very poor start in which they were 0-2. I think they were 0-2, or they got stumbling out of the gate for sure. And so here comes Cincinnati, and I'm going to take them to keep Baltimore's offense in check, maybe get a turnover or two off of Lamar Jackson, use some of that institutional knowledge of being a division foe of the Crows, and I'll take the Bengals plus the 5.5. On Thursday night. And what the hell? I'm taking the over because life is too short to bet the unders. Well, anything further on this game you want to add?
I would just say I would feel a lot better for you if Higgins actually plays. It's too early to know, but I don't think he plays again. I'll take my prop of the week. I'm going to take Gesicki because with Higgins out, he's a target monster. Gesicki, go over his 54 yards.
Over 54
yards. Oh, and I
didn't
pick the total. I'll go under. It's so high. I'll take my shot under.
All right. What's the total?
53.5.
All right. As always, you can get more from Mr. X on his website, callmemrx.com. Bet with your head, not over it. And winning is nice, but...
paid's even nicer.
All right. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, my friend.
See ya.
Couple of emails to end the podcast today. A lot of feedback on daylight savings time. Jerry Orton Jr. writes, Zabe, working in the dark is way better than doing anything else at night. Well, that's if you're inside at a desk job. I would say if you're outside trying to dig ditches in the middle of an intersection to fix a water main, I think you'd want it light. Anyway, he says, I like you, get up at 4:30 a.m. and will not see daylight for the next few months. I prefer longer daytime after work hours so I can be outside walking, cooking, etc. Yeah, what's the etc.? Besides all your walking and all your cooking, which takes what, 40 minutes? Right now, it's dark when I get up and dark when I go home. No vitamin D for me. Well, I'm sorry to hear that about your schedule. The thing about this daylight savings argument is you want the daylight when it's best for you. And here's another email on that front. Daylight savings time. This from Steve in Janesville. Steve, you should send this to your boy in Minnesota. Charge, I would prefer just staying on standard time year-round. I'd rather have more daylight when it's cooler out in the summer with 5 a.m. tee times and an extra hour of fishing before it gets hot here in Wisconsin. Okay, here's the problem with that. I don't want it. I want it to be as light as late as possible in the glorious summertime months. I have no use for the sun coming up at 4:45 a.m. And when you say 5 a.m. tee times, good luck on that. Because most golf courses do not have equipment with headlights or a green staff that can get out there in the middle of the night to prep the course for the day's play. Cutting the tees, cutting the greens, raking the bunkers, setting the cups. Some courses do, but most courses that are decent at all, you know, the maintenance crew is out there at O Dark 30. So 5 a.m. is, you're not going to get a 5 a.m. tee time. And many people don't want to wake up that early. And as far as fishing, okay, great. You're a fisherman. You want that hour early instead of late. But here's the bottom line. Arrange your day accordingly. The amount of sunshine and daylight does not vary person by person. I get it that if you've got a desk job or somewhere at the office where you literally are pinned down, cannot leave before 4:30 at the earliest or 5, and there's no way to go out and enjoy a quick 30 or 45 minutes of daylight recreation in the dead of summer or in the dead of winter. Yeah, you're going to want the clock shifted in the direction where you can at least get an hour. Quit your job or walk at daytime or walk in the morning. I don't know what to say. Or move somewhere where it's not so northern and there's a little bit more daylight available, like Arizona or New Mexico or Florida or who knows where. But I do love I love people's passion for it, even though the funniest thing is there's no more daylight for anybody. This one from Eric Kruger. Oh, my God. The 97.3 The Game podcast is fixed. Yes, it is. We have finally rerouted the taping and the posting of the content you so desire with me and Butchie and Luddy on 97.3 The Game, 6 to 9 a.m. In podcast form, available at the iHeart app and wherever you get your podcasts. We have reconfigured it so that there is a raw feed of just us. No music, no bumpers, no theme songs for our planned bits, because we've not settled this rights fee issue with the music labels, but you just get us. I would think it sounds weird as fuck, but it's better than having the podcast chopped up and mangled and otherwise disfigured. So you're welcome. And as Eric said, if either candidate last night would have promised this day after the election, they would have won my vote no matter what. I don't give a shit how much I might have hated that particular candidate. Had nothing to do with it, but it was just good timing. So there you go. And then finally, there is this. I mentioned what highlight is as sick and mind-bending as the Saquon Barkley highlight. I was reminded of this play involving the Eagles with the same Kelly Green helmet, only this time it wasn't a throwback. It was just called their uniform. With the silver pants and the silver wings, and one Randall Cunningham, old number 12, the lanky, long-throwing, freakish quarterback running, throwing combo out of UNLV. This play you may remember.
Throw the ball every time if I'm Philadelphia tonight. And what you do when you have a quarterback, back like Randall
quarterback.
Cunningham, you let him roll out. You give him.
Hold on, was that a gaffe by my boy Frank Gifford there? When you got a quarterback.
Philadelphia tonight. And what you do when you have a quarterback?
Yes, it was.
And what you do when you have a quarterback?
Oh, my God. He would have been canceled in today's day and age. I believe that's Dan Dierdorf as well on the broadcast. This was, what year is it listed? Video was posted in 2019. I know it was way before.
Back like Randall Cunningham, you let him roll out. You give him an option. He's a great runner. Give him an option to either throw or run the football. Third down, goal to go. Look at that agility. That's something special right there. Jimmy Giles, the receiver. Cunningham, by all rights, hit by Carl Banks. He should have been down. He maintained his balance. We talked about his athleticism. And he fires in the corner. Beautifully executed rollout.
Terrible call right there by Gifford. But, of course, Gifford was supposed to be a color man, not a play-by-play guy. He did play-by-play briefly, or well, for a period there on Monday Night Football. And Randall Cunningham got blasted by Carl Banks right in the knees and the thighs on that sprint out and absorbed the hit. And because Banks didn't wrap him up, was able to kick his legs out, put his right arm down like it was a kickstand, and pop right back up to throw a touchdown. A truly incredible play. So thank you for bringing that up. I had forgotten about it, but that certainly qualifies. Craig Shermolai with the submission there for one of the great all-time highlights in NFL history. That's a wrap for me tonight and Mr. X. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to join us on Friday's pod, well, come on, but I need $5 first. Fridays are part of the premium package, and it involves me, Scott Lynn, Steve Solomon, the old gang together again from Fox Sports Radio days. And if you buy a year in advance, you get 12 months for the price of 11. What a bargain. For a mere $4.33 or something like that, you get me on Fridays. Plus, you get the Monday through Thursday podcasts ad-free. So you got that going for you, which is nice. But wait, there's more. You also get them early when they're posted the evening before I go to bed. So what's stopping you? Just go to zabe.com/premium and sign up today. Thanks for listening. Rate and review. Tickle the algorithmic gods. And we will see you next time. They say to fully enjoy life, you should collect experiences, not things. Physical things you buy become outdated. They lose their appeal. But an experience lasts forever and grows over the years. That's why I want you to know about the Mervis Diamond South Africa Safari coming this March 2025. Enjoy a 5-star luxury adventure with native South African and longtime fixture on the DC diamond scene, Ronnie Mervis himself, leading the group. I've been on the trip twice, and it is spectacular. You'll fly to Cape Town, see the legendary Table Mountain, visit wine country and the spectacular coast. Then it's off to the Kapama Game Reserve to see the Big Five in their natural habitat: lion, elephant, Cape buffalo, leopard, and rhino. Finally, a tour of the Cullinan Diamond Mine in Johannesburg to see where the sparkly magic comes from. All told, 11 luxury days on the ground, all-inclusive, for just $6,300 a person. This is it, people. The banger safari trip of a lifetime. I've been twice with Ronnie. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee it. Book now. Space is limited, and it's filling up quick. For more information, go to MervisDiamond.com/safari or call travel consultant John Almeida at 888-722-4872 and tell him I sent you. Remember, life is short. Collect memories, not things. As the leaves turn and the air gets crisp, it is time for some serious action. Bet on Lord Football, from heart-pounding college rivalries to the bone-crushing NFL matchups. But that's not all. The ice is getting cold and the courts are heating up. Get in on the NHL face-off and NBA tip-offs as both leagues kick off their seasons. And if you want to get really nuts, bet on the election. Won't that be fun? If you've been waiting for the right time to get in, the time is now. Make your winning move today. Sign up at mybookie.ag. Use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to be eligible for all promotions. Once again, promo code ZABE to get in on the sweet action. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.